Peter van Inwagen is a professor of philosophy at the University of Notre Dame. He is the author of Ontology, Identity and Modality, Essays in Metaphysics.
Why does anything exist at all? But before we get there, is this even a viable question to ask?
One argument for its being a viable question would be that one can think of answers to it, even if they're not right. That is, one possible answer would be it's impossible for there to be nothing. For example, I can think of several ways in which that might be true. I mean, I don't know that it's a viable question in the sense that there's going to be, it's going to be possible to find a definitive answer to it. But then I don't know of any substantive philosophical question that you can find a definitive answer to.
Well, I agree with that to a certain extent. Some philosophers such as A.C. Grayin or Stephen Law here in the UK believe, though, it's one of those questions that makes grammatical and lexical sense, but then may have no applicable answer to it, akin to something like, what colour is the number three? I've spoken to Peter Forrest and John Leslie on this issue, and they do believe it is a viable question. I'm sort of in between the two, because I think that quite clearly we can put forward categories of answers that may answer this question, but then again, having nothing outside of the possibility of something almost makes nothing redundant. For example, within time and space that we have something, it may not actually be possible to think of nothing outside of time and space, and therefore it's not even a viable question to ask why there's nothing at all. Leaving that aside in terms of not being able to have any philosophical definitive answers, let's concentrate on the aspect of whether it's impossible for there not to be anything. I basically believe that we can take this both in a theistic view and a non-theistic view. So if you would also address why it may be impossible for there not to be nothing.
There would be two ways. If we think of possible worlds, that is, ways that reality, all the different possible ways that reality could be, they may all contain something. That would be the same thing as it's being impossible for there to be nothing. So each one, that's all the possibilities, each one of them includes something. And there are two ways in which that could be true. One is that there is some being, some one being that exists in all possible circumstances, a necessary being, as metaphysicians say. The Christians who traditionally believe that God has that feature, but it doesn't follow from the concept of a necessary being that that being is, say, a person or a conscious agent or something like that. It could, for all the question, why is there something rather than nothing demands, a perfectly good answer would be that there was a necessary being which was entirely impersonal, like Aristotle's God or the Neoplatonic one or something we can't even imagine. If there were no necessary being, however, it doesn't follow that it's possible for there to be nothing, because it might be that for some reason that we can't quite grasp, there are contingent beings, as metaphysicians say. A contingent being is a being that might not have existed. It might be that you look at any possible way that reality is and it contains some contingent beings, although no necessary beings. So those are two ways in which it might be impossible for there to be nothing.
For there to be a necessary being that may not, by definition, have to be God, can we extend this definition of being to some form of existence? So could the laws of nature fill this void here in terms of a necessary being, i.e. there are laws of nature which makes it impossible for there not to be nothing? Would that satisfy that criteria?
Well, I have to ask, that what sort of thing a law of nature is. I would think that a law of nature was a statement or a proposition or a thesis or something like that. Newton's law of gravitation, for example, is the statement, the proposition that between any two bodies there is a force that's proportionate to the product of their masses and inversely proportional to the square of the distance between. That's a statement. Naturally, that state, I suppose if you're a Platonist and you believe in propositions or statements as really existing things, you probably believe they're necessarily existent, but it wouldn't necessarily have to have the status of a law of nature. It could even be false in some possible worlds. In fact, if there were an empty world, if that is a world in which there was nothing, mm-hmm. and by nothing we mean, I think, nothing concrete, nothing with causal powers. Mm-hmm. You know, if there were numbers in every world or propositions in every world, I don't think that would count as an answer to the question, why is there something rather than nothing? Because we aren't talking really about those kinds of things. At least I'm not, if I ask the question. So that law might still exist even if there were nothing. But, of course, it wouldn't be a law then.
That's the problem with it. How would you position the argument from certain corners of cosmology and contemporary physics about the possibility of there being something from nothing is to do with quantum wave fluctuations where particles come in and out in existence from nothing? That is a contentious issue that usually brings up problems in two ways, whether this infinite field of quantum wave fluctuations constitutes nothing in the first place, and whether that still makes it impossible for there not to be nothing. What are your thoughts on this area?
I think that all the explanations the physicists give are of how a state of affairs in which you have just fields develops into a state of affairs in which you have particles as well. Mm. They explain why it's not possible just to have fields, but they don't really tell you why the fields are there. The quantum field, for example, is there in the first place.
So in that respect, you're treating the quantum field as nothing. Well, as in not nothing, because it's there in the first place.
Well, it's got properties, right?
Sure, sure.
If it had different properties, it wouldn't generate particles. So it's not nothing.
Yeah, this is the problem. I mean, you could technically see it as nothing, but then to accept that obviously plays problems with the everyday intuitive sense of there being something, because fields are technically something. But what physicists are saying is that it's not something, that there's a perpetual infinite level of nothingness which contains these quantum wave fluctuations which then produce something. Now that arises the additional problem of this concept of infinity. Before Big Bang inflationary cosmology, there was a popular notion that the universe had always existed infinitely. So for me personally, even though it's almost cheating in how we're defining nothing, it's still problematic, because you still would have to deal with some kind of infinity in the backdrop. And for me, this is, in terms of the arising of contingent aspects, which would be the universe, this is a problem that is faced by both theists and non-theists, because they've got this backdrop of infinity to deal with. So in the respect of there being absolute nothing, but it's just fields that produce these quantum wave fluctuations, then there's an infinite backdrop of these fields that contain something. At the same time, if there are laws of nature that brought these to being, then that runs into another problem of them existing abstractly, like you mentioned, and again possibly being infinite. And then the same would apply to, there's different notions of a causal god, but if you take one such as Brian Lefto's or Spitzer's concept of God, which is a non-contingent being that created a contingent universe, then that also falls into the problem of infinities for me personally. So how would you address these problems of infinities? Is it as problematic as I'm saying, or can we get around them another way?
Well, I don't suppose that I don't see any reason to think the concept of infinity is in any way conceptually defective, owing to certain measurements in the cosmic background radiation. A lot of physicists have recently concluded that the universe is infinite, although most of it is moving away from us too fast, so fast that the light is stretched flat and we'll never see it. Mm-hmm. But there would, literally speaking, be, say, an infinite number of stars. I don't see any conceptual problems with that. I can't speak to the physics, but there doesn't seem to be any. Is there anything wrong with saying there has been, that there is an infinite number of stars?
In that respect, no. When you put it like that, this is not necessarily a defective concept. Some thinkers in this field, though, do have a problem with infinity existing in an actual sense. I believe that William Lane Craig, for example, is one of them when he talks about infinite regressions and causations. But if you're saying there isn't a problem with that, then what is the problem that someone like William Craig's getting at, and why don't you agree with that?
Well, he offers a certain argument, but the argument just seems to me to be fallacious. It turns on an equivocation of what it means to say that there are more of something. For example, suppose that there were infinitely many stars, Craig says. Well, and suppose God created another star or something, then there'd be more stars, right?
Mm-hmm.
But there can't be more stars than infinity, so it doesn't make any sense. But that's just, there's an equivocation on more there. There'd be more stars in the sense that there would be a star that there had not been before. There would not be more stars in the sense that the number of stars had changed.
Okay, yes.
For finite numbers, that rule follows. If you have a new something, then you've got more something. If you had a certain number of sheep and then another sheep pops up, then you've got more sheep than you had. The number of sheep is greater than it was before, but that doesn't work for infinite numbers. And Craig knows that in a certain way. I just don't see why he thinks those arguments have any force.
Well, so far, we've covered a little bit of ground. I've asked you to talk about different issues such as the definition of nothing, the problems or non-problems of having concept of infinity here in the backdrop. You've also started talking about the different ways of perhaps answering this question. So when someone asks you, Peter, why does anything exist at all, what would be for you the best ways to kind of approach this question, assuming that we cannot get necessarily a definitive answer, but what are the things that we should always have in consideration?
Well, if you're talking about philosophical arguments, right?
Yes.
That's what kind of philosophical arguments could be offered. Well, there are two kinds of arguments that have been offered for the existence of a necessary being to start with. That's one way, remember I said, that there could be nothing. The ontological argument and the cosmological argument, they all come in several versions. I think that for several reasons, dependent on each version, there's no hope in the ontological argument, that it is simply a failure. The cosmological argument is kind of interesting, but it depends on some such principle as the principle of sufficient reason, which is that you could put it this way. Instead of the principle of sufficient reason, let's call it the principle of universal explanation. Everything has an explanation. It sounds a little bit plausible when you put it that way. But that's really a very strong statement that everything has an explanation. I've argued, and a lot of philosophers agree with me, that when you put it in that strong form, it implies that every truth is a necessary truth. And of course, naturally, since there is something, it will follow from the principles. If the principle of sufficient reason implies that every truth is a necessary truth, then it's just going to follow from the fact that there is something, that there has to be something, and there couldn't be nothing. I think the trick with the cosmological argument is to find a principle that's strong enough to get the conclusion, but not weak, but not so strong as to have the bizarre consequence that nothing could have been different from the way it is. And I don't think that trick has ever been, that anyone has ever seen how to work that trick. I don't think that there is a good statement of anything like the principle of sufficient reason. Another possibility would be not to try to prove that there is a necessary being, but to prove that there have to be contingent beings. Okay. Unfortunately, there don't seem to be any arguments for that conclusion at all. You can recognize it as a possibility, but I don't know how you would argue for it.
We're faced with the problem of we don't necessarily have to argue that there has to be necessary beings, yet there is no argument for there being contingent beings. Is this correct?
No argument for there that there have to be contingent beings.
Okay, and no arguments either for there being necessary beings.
There are arguments that have been put forward. But I think that they have such grave problems that they're very far from being convincing. In fact, I don't find them convincing at all. But there isn't even an argument to examine in the case of they're necessarily being contingent beings.
Sure, sure. So if we can't rely on either necessity or contingency, where does this leave us?
Well, you might argue for an or statement.
Okay.
That is, it has to be the case that either there's a necessary being or necessarily there are contingent beings. I do think I see some hope in that. I've been working on an argument along those conclusions. It incorporates some items, some aspects of the so-called modal ontological argument, some aspects of the cosmological argument. I haven't been able to convince many people that the argument nobody finds it convincing. I can't even say I find it convincing. I just find it interesting.
your own argument, you find it interesting, if not convincing. But you're saying because there's no necessarily correct way to argue two of them, you should basically pick between necessity or contingency.
If both A and B have a consequence C, if A leads to C and B leads to C, and you want to prove that C, you could do it by proving that either A or B. You wouldn't have to decide which. So if there being a necessary being means it's impossible for there to be nothing, and there necessarily being contingent beings implies that it's impossible for there to be nothing, then if you have an argument for the conclusion that either there's a necessary being or necessarily there are contingent beings, that would be an inclusive or, of course. That is, those are consistent. They could both be true.
Yeah, yes.
But the conclusion of the argument is consistent with at most one of them being true.
Yeah, at least one of them being true. Okay, what else? Is there any other kind of work you're doing in this area moving forward?
Well, I'm going to teach a seminar in the topic in the fall. You know, there have been some... John Leslie has just brought out this collection. Mm-hmm. And Tyron Goldschmidt has just brought out a collection of original papers. And there was a big conference at Yale 2 years ago that brought together scientists and theologians and philosophers to talk about the question. Mm-hmm. So there's been a recent upsurge of interest in it, enough to teach a graduate seminar on the subject.